Oh, this is the first time, and you're just so emotionally, jarred for this
Yeah.
event.
Yeah, it's this is the first time in a long time I brought alcohol, so maybe that's playing effect. But yes, I did just go through a whole spiel and you alerted me to the fact we weren't recording.
Yeah, I wasn't
So
sure exactly how long I should let you keep going, and then I was like, because I didn't realize at the start, but then I was like, I don't think I heard Central Zoom Lady at any point.
it's a good thing you cut me off because I could have literally gotten halfway through the entire episode before I realized that would have been a fucking nightmare. That's always my worst nightmare, is that like we have a guest on or something. Or we're pressed for time, and yeah, halfway through discover, and I'm like, "What do you do then? Do you just like scramble to reschedule? Do you beg people to stay an extra 2 hours, or do you just put it down to a lost file or something?"
Yeah, it's a tough one. There is a I don't know, do you know the Second Captain's podcast, the sports podcast?
Yeah.
So Richie Sadlier does some stuff with them, and he started a segment on it called The Player's Chair, where he interviews figures from the world of sports. And he interviewed Mick McCarthy, who's like his old manager from Millwall, and
Yeah.
he did the whole interview, like met him in a hotel, whatever, did the whole interview, and then realized his recorder had like stopped working or ran out of juice or whatever. So rang him, was like, listen, really sorry, that actually didn't record. Like, is there any chance you'd do it again? Mick McCarthy, being the gent that he is, was like, yeah, I'll that's fine, we'll reschedule. So they rescheduled, and he got the interview, and then he managed to not produce the file somehow the
Of
second time
course.
around. So he had to ask Mick McCarthy for a third time
Oh.
and only Mick McCarthy, I would say, of the entire footballing world, was gent enough to say, yes, Richie, let's do it a third time. We're this day and place, please. And eventually he got it recorded.
That's
So you haven't
fucking
done anything
terrible.
like that, Kieran. So,
No.
that man's
No.
a, well, he's not a professional podcaster, but, Second Captain's probably have more production values than we do, so.
Yeah. So, good evening, listeners. And now the end is near, and so we face the final curtain. It is the final episode of our wonderful show. Reeling in Your Ears is coming to a close. We've had dizzying highs, terrifying lows, and creamy middles. To join me, as always, on our final outing each week, I've given him a witty introduction, but this week, he's my friend and yours. It's Simon Chadwick.
Hey, Garen, how you getting on?
All better now that I know we're fucking recording.
Yeah, well, that's always a plus. It's always good. It's always good.
Yeah, it's like the Swiss flag, it's a big plus. Yeah, so here we are. We're at the final episode.
We've made it through all those years, all those cardigans,
Yeah.
and awkward moments, and IRA bombings, and politicians losing the run of themselves, and all that
Yeah.
crack. And here we
Yeah.
are.
Yeah, we've made it to the end. So, how do we do this, right? Do we just get straight into the show and we'll talk about, the last year and a half afterwards, or do we just start off with it and then just get into the show? Your pick.
Let's go. Let's get into the show, and then
Okay.
I think we can sum it up at the end. I think that's probably
Okay,
the best way to go.
that's the best way to do it. So we open up this week with a lovely old granny, but not just any granny, it's Shane Lowry's granny, Emily Scanlon, as she recalls his past successes, saying he thought he was Tiger Woods when he won the Mullingar Scratch Cup. However, this year he's taken home the British Open at the Royal Portrush Golf Club. He returns to a hero's welcome in his native Offaly. So yeah, this was a huge win for Shane Lowry, and I have to say, I love his granny.
Yeah, she just seems like a real sound Irish granny here, not letting him get too far ahead of himself.
Yeah, kind of bringing him back in, like, I sure didn't think he was great when he won a local tournament, but no, she seems like everybody's kind of lovely granny. And I was only thinking after I watched this, like, I'm not a big golf guy, and like obviously I know the major guys like Shane Lowry, Pouring Harrington, etc. It goes to show that I can only name two off the top of my head, but the fact that like I genuinely believe he's maybe one of two famous people from Offaly, him and Neil Delamere, and I think that's it. I can't really think of anybody else from Offaly who's famous.
Yeah, I mean, do you count, like, I don't think you can count, like, politicians or people of that
Nah,
ilk, like
nah.
Brian Cowan. Like, they're not really,
Yeah, that's.
they're not really famous. I mean, they're famous, they're not really famous. They have, by the nature of their job, they're famous.
It's like if you include Brian Cowan and the like, you kind of have to include the whole Offaly GAA squad, like as well. It's kind of by association. They've been on RT, that's about it. But no, Shane Lowry doing doing awfully proud. And Mike Pence pays a visit to Ireland this year as he traces his family connections to Sligo and Doonbeg, County Clare. There's something incredibly sinister about Pence. Like, he looks evil. I don't know what it is. Something strikes me. Like, he looks like, oh God, he looks like a villain out of like Thunderbirds or something. You know, he's just, his hair never moves. He's like a marionette. And we also get a follow-up visit from Dumb and Dumber as Trump and his wife Melania visit Ireland also. Much like last week where we saw the giant baby balloon, this year's visit is also marked with protest, but mostly around the issue of climate change as America has withdrawn from the Paris Climate Agreement because, you know, why not? Eric and Don Jr. also visit Doonbeg and are presented with a picture of a rock which looks suspiciously like a willy. They buy the pub a pint, so that's nice. Meanwhile, Donald Sr. is on the golf resort getting in a few games where he's interrupted by school children, but at least he posed for a photo. His only official meeting would be with Taoiseach Leo Varadkar. Leo looks terrified when he tries to compare the two border situations.
Aaron, this is the most unwanted people in the country in the same year since the Brits invaded.
Since William of Orange, like,
yeah, like since King Billy trotted in on his horse, like this is just, this is, I mean, I've been giving out about Trump so much in these last few episodes, I'm not going to do it again because they're last night, but like this is so ridiculous. So A, Mike Pence, we do not want Mike Pence, we don't
not
want
at
you
all.
Tracing your ancestry, okay, we don't want you claiming allegiance to wherever it was, I can't even remember,
Doonbeg.
We, yeah, to Doom, ah, fuck it, Doom. Well, Doonbeg has a lot to answer for, right? I'll get to that. So Doonbeg, right? We don't want Mike Pence. Very convenient that it's Doonbeg where Trump has his golf resort, don't you think? But anyway, that's beside the point. Mike Pence can fuck off. I hope he never comes to Ireland again. The Dumb and Dumber, right? Eric and Don Jr. It's so typical that they're so the type of kids that have to buy the pub a pint to have friends.
Yeah.
You know, those type of people who just like, they're buying the friendship or the company, really, because like, you know, people are like, no, we don't really like these guys, but they're like, ah, drinks for all everyone. It's like, right, you can sit in the corner quietly.
Yeah. And, it's like we only hang out with them because their dad has a boat kind of a thing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Right. Yeah. We only hang out with you because your dad's like you because your dad is president. And we don't like you because your dad's a dickhead too. And then daddy is in Doonbeg, you know, comes to Ireland, for like private reasons, like to play golf, right? Not to interact with, I know he had to have a meeting with Leo Varadkar because he's the fucking president of the US coming to Ireland, but like not to do anything else, not to do any official functions. Not that anyone really wanted to lay on official functions for him, yeah. But like at the same time, you know, show a bit of effort, Trump. But no, he was just, and I like the forced smile in that picture with the school children. The people of Doonbeg have a lot to answer for. Like, stop showing up and waving American flags when Trump's there. Stop posing with his kids in the pub. Like, just stop, right? Just stop. We don't want these people in Ireland whatsoever. And I think I can speak for the majority of the Irish public when we say that. So please just stop, Doonbeg. We're watching you.
Yeah, we went from William of Orange to Donald the Orange. The two lads, like, I mean, look, the way they were handling the situation with the people in the poem and the way they were talking, whatever, like, if these weren't Trump's kids and you didn't know the context, you'd think it's just, they look like two lovely lads. But then they open their mouth and you're like, yep, they're Trump's. And like, there's just no getting away from that, really. Like, they can go emancipate themselves, set up their own shit and just never be associated with him again. They're just forever fucking idiots in my life. Like, even down to Melania, like, she has to be similar age to his kids. Like, that's fucking weird in itself.
Oh, I'm pretty sure she is. Yeah, I'm pretty sure she is. I don't have the facts in front of me here, but I believe that that there's not much of an age disparity there. But that's very common for American rich men of a certain age, I think. They usually divorce the mother of their children, and then as they get old, and we know Trump's opinion on women and their appearance, so you know it's no surprise that he traded in his first wife and other wives, I think, for Melania, yeah. who is I mean, yeah, I don't Melania is okay. Melania is 52, right? Yeah. Looking well on it. I gotta give her that. Looking well on it.
Don Jr. is 44.
Yeah, so like that's not a massive age gap when you consider that Don Sr. is 76, so he's 24 years older than her. You know, and Don Jr. and Eric are, you know, within 10 years of her, I think.
Yeah.
Eric's 38, so he's 12 years younger there. So yeah, not and of course, you know, it's not uncommon. I get that. You know, but as I said, especially with the, you know, American men of a certain age. But yeah, not
Not great.
He still seems like a prisoner in all these things.
I think it's the Botox kind of gives it that look. It's like, you know, I would smile, but I can't. This year we see what is known as a soft landing on the far side of the moon, because no one likes a hard landing. The Chinese launch a probe, which is nice enough to leave a tiny Chinese flag behind. 2019 also sees the first all, excuse me, I just burped because I'm drinking harp. The first
Oh.
all, come on, it was like £6 for four cans. That's not bad. You can't beat that.
No, that's fair.
True. And it also sees the first all-female spacewalk. There's two female astronauts, Jessica Meir and Christina Koch, step outside to do repairs on the International Space Station.
It's
Like,
a neat avoidance of saying cock there in their name.
if you look up, you know, those rich billionaire people, the Koch family, it is pronounced Koch, and I had to look that up because I refuse to call the lady Christina Koch.
Yeah, well, you know, Leeds have a defender called Robin Cock,
Oh
and
no.
spelled the same way. So, you know, I would say Cock there, but there you go.
Oh, okay. That's a Robin. That's an un like, do people not think of their last names before they put first names on
Ah,
it?
no, he's German. I mean, maybe it means something else in German.
True. There is
I
a
think it
news.
does.
Oh, definitely does. It has to. Like, there's a journalist, I want to say, for either a news reporter for either Today FM or RTE, or maybe Beat, but her name is Juliette Gash. Now, when you say it slowly, it sounds like Juliette Gash, which is just a horrible visual image there.
Yes.
Yeah, so you really got to think of these surnames. But I always think of, like, when you see these astronauts doing the repairs outside the, like, imagine something as like a screw falls out of your hand and just floats away. You know what I mean? Like, you're putting together like something from IKEA and a screw falls on the floor, you'll find it. Like, you're doing repairs on the ISS and that, like, a screw or a screwdriver falls out of your hand, that's it. Bye-bye screwdriver. You're fucked.
Yeah.
And scientists also reveal the first image ever made of a black hole in space, which is described as looking like a ring of fire, or for me, like a, you know, like the morning after six cans of harp. It is gas that, like, we can see basically a black hole in depth. You know, with the and especially with the way things are coming out now with the whole James Webb telescope thing or whatever, you know, we're not all that far away really from, you know, possibly discovering, you know, like something like a fucking, you know, a planet that we can all go live on when we're done screwing up this one, or, you know, little green men in a not too far away planet either.
Yeah, this is it. I mean, when you consider, like, you know, it's 2019 is 50 years after man landed on the moon, right? That's not a long time, you know. So
No.
you think you've gone from that where that was like the most mind-blowing achievement ever was to like land, you know, land a few men on the moon and get them back safely. You know, no one had been in space prior to, was it 61? It's pretty really near, so I've suddenly lost all knowledge. But it was 61 Gagarin went to space. But the
Think
point
so,
being
yeah.
that, like, you know, that's within our lifetime. That's the year my dad was born, for example. So that's within a couple of generations, you know. And
Yeah.
you know, if you think about 1961 being the year that we first went to space, it was only 58 years before that was the first flight,
Yeah.
right? So in a couple of generations, you've gone from man not being able to fly to men landing on the moon to men and women being able to, you know, the science and technology being so advanced that we can now look at a black hole from, you know, whatever it is, billions and trillions and squillions of miles
Yeah.
away from the Earth. Like, I think that's pretty impressive. And you're right, like the strides it's made in, say, 100 years, 110 years, whatever it is, between, you know, the first airplane and this is pretty impressive. And like, it's only going to get, you would think, quicker and quicker, and we're going to make be more advanced and more advanced. And yeah, God knows what it'll be by the time we're old.
Yeah, you never know. By the time we're old, like, you know, we could have made such a fuck of a planet that we're living out our last days on a massive bus heading for Mars. And Also, up next, we see we're back at the election polls, also in the local and European elections. Fianna Fáil keeps the top position. Why? Who knows? They win the most local council seats. Sinn Féin takes a hit as it loses two European seats and drops from 159 council seats to just 81. That is a huge loss. The Greens win two European seats and go from 12 council to 49, which is a huge gain. This election, like, of course, was just there was like a groundswell almost within the Green Party. Now, you know, as much as I don't like the guy, Eamon Ryan was like, I can't even remember who led the Green Party before Eamon Ryan. But when he took over and when they were going around this election, his face was just everywhere. So it was literally just in your fucking face. And all these Green politicians started popping up left and right. Like, I think we got like four here that got elected, or like three or something like that, which is so unusual. Because a lot of older generation in particular, like, they think of the Greens is just like a bunch of, you know, left-wing hippies or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's very unusual to see, like, the numbers in here. It's just, it's really irregular. Aside from Fianna Fáil, you know, keeping the top position, it's just irregular the way things have gone.
It is, and it's funny because this, because of COVID and the lockdowns and everything, this feels like much longer ago. It's only 3 years ago, but I suppose, yeah, you're right. Two things happened. Like the Eamon Ryan mentions the green wave that was like Europe wide, so there was a massive push, and we see it in some of the later segments here, the climate change and Greta Thunberg and all that. So there was a massive green push for green support. What was happening was a lot of people were putting the Greens down as maybe their first choice in the absence of actually, you know, really caring too much in terms of those local elections. You know, it was kind of like I'll give a vote to a green to the green because it's the local election. So like it's, you know, it's not a general election. But so there was that, and then I think there was, you know, genuine like, okay, we need more green politicians in power, et cetera, et cetera. And of course they weren't in government yet. And the
No.
following year then, just before COVID, we had a general election. The government that we have now was formed where the Greens are kind of a minority party in it, and you know, history shows you the Greens become very unpopular when they go into government,
Oh, yeah.
because they're just seen as ineffectual because everyone thinks all they do is trying to make green policies and we don't implement them, and then, you know, Eamon Ryan gets falls asleep in the dole and blah blah blah, and, you know, so yes, I think that's why it seems so shocking now that this happened and it was only 3 years ago, but it'll happen again. That, you know, climate change will be an issue and it's just going to be an increasing thing in
Yeah.
our mind. So the Green Party will, but they'll need to expand their what they do, because while people are, while people like to be think they're conscious of the green issues, you know, voting for a green local councillor is not really going to solve the global climate change crisis. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's because, you know, the whole idea of green and the Green Party is essentially like, you know, we want to make the world a better place, which is great. But I think, unfortunately, a lot of people don't realize is that making the world a better place and making the world more energy efficient, etc., is very, very fucking expensive. And it comes at the cost of, like, you know, emissions taxes and things like that, which pisses off a lot of people. And they just expect the Green Party to be like, you know, oh, we'll go off and have a think on how to reduce, reuse, and recycle, and it won't have any major impact on your life. But unfortunately, it gets kind of pricey trying to save the planet, really. And unfortunately for Eamon Ryan, aside from falling asleep and looking like a Wally on his bicycle, which, by the way, has to be like one of the greatest moments of all Irish politic history, is just that man cannot stay awake, like, at all. Sleepy aiming. But and up next in the Camogie, Galway beat Kilkenny 314 to 17 points, while in the men's hurling, Tipperary beat Kilkenny 325 to 20 points. Battered. Not the best year for Kilkenny all round. And I kind of made note here, it's a bit odd that they show the hurling and Camogie side by side, and then later the football and the LGFA, because usually they do the men or then the women, or women and then the men. But obviously they're just, I don't know what they're trying here. But hey, look, they put them
Yeah,
both.
they're trying something. I think it's to do with the football later being a double for Dublin. I think they
Yeah,
wanted to kind of show that. But yeah, this
of
was
course.
yeah, you're right. Not great for Kilkenny losing both finals. And I know with the hurling, this was the year Wexford should have won it, Kieran.
Yeah.
We beat Kilkenny's brains out in the Leinster final and then lost to Tip in a semi final despite being a man up
Yeah.
and 5 points up at one stage. But anyway,
The less said about that, the
totally
better.
totally over it 3 years later. Totally over it.
Still not sour. And up next, we say goodbye to another Reeling of the Year stalwart as Gay Byrne, at the age of 85, passes away. 6 decades of a career, and what a career it was. He pushed the envelope in terms of, like, what broadcasting was. I know he was a bit placid in a sense that he didn't want to cause too much controversy. But I mean, his mere existence at the very beginning, we saw it, the sort of complaints that it got at the beginning in the 60s, the Late Show got, and you know, he stuck with it until, you know, the end when he kind of retired, and you know, he came back with his radio show and with his, you know, TV show, The Meaning of Life, etc. So he was always around. You know, me and Gay were actually friends on Facebook. Did I mention
Oh,
that to you
really?
before?
I think you
Yeah.
did, yeah.
Yeah, because I was at home one day. I was actually at work, and I read the paper, and it had oh, Gay Byrne is on social media, blah blah blah. And I was like, some laugh if he added me as a friend. And I went on to his Facebook and added him as a friend. And up until, you know, this couple of years before his death, every time it was my birthday, he would just post happy birthday, which I was
Oh, what a
yeah,
gent.
what a joke, exactly, what a gent. Now, it was one of those Facebook pages that, like, you know, I don't know, like your 80-year-old aunt would have. Like, she's had the same profile, yeah, the same profile picture since day one. You know, it was just him and the kids. I didn't see him playing Candy Crush, you know. Joe Duffy is lost for words as he's overcome with emotion. And Mary McAleese says everyone feels like they lost something, but because of his life, feels like they've gained something. And yeah, no, it's absolutely true. I remember when the news broke, I was upstairs in the office in work, and somebody said, "Oh my God, Gay Byrne died," and the whole place just down tools for about 5 minutes and was like, "Oh my God, oh my God," because it was like losing a granddad.
Yeah, it is, and like he's, I mean, it actually ties things up very neatly for us because obviously he was such a big part of RTE right through the years, so therefore he's a big part of Reeling in the Years up until his retirement, and we saw him leaving the late in 99. He appeared sporadically after that in Meaning of Life and the Road Safety Authority that he was chairman of for a good while. We saw him in various guises. Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Which
Yeah,
he
oh
also
God,
presented,
yeah.
if you remember that.
I
But
do.
yeah, like I mean, I think about Gay Byrne. Yeah, I think through when you looking back now through a modern lens, it probably seemed quite tame. But at the time, like he was groundbreaking in terms of what he was doing on the Late Late and also on his radio show in terms of the topics that were covered. And we actually
Yeah.
saw one or two of them. Like we saw a debate about the Lover's Guide, if you remember that in the early
Yeah.
90s. We saw debates about, we saw segments about condoms. We saw him meeting all the gangs, the
Oh
different gang
God,
members
remember
in
that?
1983. You know, so like he was constantly pushing boundaries in his own way. So like, but you've got to remember that, you know, and again, we'll recap everything at the end, but like, when Reeling in the Years and when RTE started, therefore when Reeling in the Years started the first episodes, the years are harking back to like Ireland's such a conservative country, and obviously as we've seen it gradually becomes less and less conservative, and we've seen in the last few episodes, you know, the repeal of the abortion legislation on the right to life and the gay marriage bill and all the rest of it, like, you know, that's all some of that is attributed to Gay Byrne pushing the boundaries in 70s Ireland and 80s Ireland when it was still quite a conservative country. And, you know, the only thing people consumed on a Friday night was really, it was Late Late Show. And so they saw this stuff, and it just was the first time people might have seen a condom, you know, was on the Late Late
Yeah.
Show, or the first time someone might have heard of, you know, the porn. Not that the Lover's Guide was particularly porn, but that's what they were discussing. But, you know, that kind of debate, that a lot of sexual stuff, like the first thing people would have heard about that in repressed old Ireland before the internet was on the Late Late Show. You know, so Gay Byrne was at the forefront of that. And yeah, just again, yeah, he was. I think that's a really good way of summing him up, is he was like a granddad. He was everyone's granddad or everyone's
Yeah.
uncle, you know, a great uncle who, you know, popped up every once in a while. And I think everyone in Ireland felt the loss.
Absolutely. And I only looked it up just when I was doing my research here that it's the so the Late Late Show. It's technically the longest running chat show in the world, television chat show in the world. And I say technically because the only one that beats it is the late is the Tonight Show in America. But because the Tonight Show changes hosts, when it changes hosts, it changes name. So you had the Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, the Tonight Show with Jay Leno, etc., or the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. They're all considered different shows, essentially, even though they're under the same banner. So technically, the Late Late Show is the longest running, chat show, TV chat show in the world. And Gay, of course, was a huge part of that because they wanted to chuck it off the air, and he obviously went and fought for it. If you get a chance, look up the Gay Byrne documentary. I think it's on the RT player. It's fantastic. It's great insight into his life, and all the topics they discussed on the Late Show is in there. And in Paris, the Notre Dame Cathedral is badly damaged by, well, badly damaged, it's wrecked in a huge inferno. It would burn for a total of 15 hours. And while people gather to pray, great thinking, everyone head to the big fire to pray. it would eventually get, you know, repaired. But this was just huge news. I don't actually remember reading about what exactly it was. I think it was a candle. Was it a candle that started it?
Yes, I think so. I think they were worried it was arson of some kind, but I don't think it was. Yeah, this, I mean, the world really lost its shit about this, and like it got loads of money and stuff, and a lot of celebrities kind of posted about it and sent money and stuff, which like is great and all, but you know, like there were probably far better causes for all of that angst. But anyway, like no, look, it is obviously one of the most famous buildings in the world. It was extremely badly damaged, so I mean, I understand people's upset, and I suppose a lot of people of our generation grew up with the film The Hunchback of Notre Dame, and therefore, you know, may feel a connection to the Notre Dame Cathedral, despite maybe, well, I have seen it in the flesh. I'm not
Yeah, me
sure
too.
I've seen it. I've definitely seen it, but yeah, you know, some people may not have, but that film may be
The cause for that.
yeah, possibly.
Yeah, it's gas because around the time when this happened, my phone's not on silent, never mind. The Irish Simpsons Facebook page, they, you know, had memes about it or whatever, and some French guy somewhere got annoyed and spread the word that this Irish Facebook group was mocking, you know, what had happened. And because of that, they essentially, that group got raided by French people who were reporting every single meme about it to Facebook. And because of that, basically Facebook kind of cracked down on, you know, a mild censorship on the ISF page for a little bit of time. So they had to actually ease up on, you know, be careful about what you made fun of. So, moral of the story there, don't piss off the French.
Yes. Of course, you could go to war with them and they'll surrender, but don't piss them off on Facebook.
As groundskeeper Willie says, bonjour, you cheese-eating surrender monkeys. In Syria, over 13 million people have been displaced as a result of civil wars over the past 8 years. However, ISIS are on the back foot as US-backed forces regain control and more than 5,000 Islamic State fighters surrender. This kind of seems like, I know around this time it was all over social media with Jihadi John and all those videos and everything. And, you know, it was at the forefront of everybody's minds. It was like, oh my God, they're going to take over the world and, you know, be attacks at the Bataclan. In the grand scheme of things, like if you compare it to the likes of the Mujahideen or the Taliban, you know, this was kind of over before it really started. You know, like I know they took over huge parts of Syria and, you know, the Middle East, but it was kind of quickly extinguished when you look at it.
Yeah, I think they certainly took over large parts of countries that probably you didn't hear a lot about. You know, but yeah, I think when US backed forces got their act together and you know, they really put their full might towards it, it was never going to be much of a contest.
No, to be fair, it wasn't. And up next, order. Jesus, that is incredibly grating. How can anyone listen to that? He's taking the piss at the end there with his, with, like, trying different styles.
Well, yeah, that's John Bercow to a T. He likes to be
Fucking.
that guy.
Fucking idiot. Brexit is still at the forefront of everyone's mind this year, as Britain is still undecided about what the fuck to do about Brexit. Theresa May basically says, what the fuck do you people want from me? The prospect of a no-deal Brexit, meaning they leave with the EU with no deal, does what it says on the tin. It's threatening for Ireland. Meanwhile, Theresa May's EU deal is rejected three times by Westminster Parliament. It's almost like that meme in The Simpsons, you know, come on, just do it. I'll be your friend. Donald Tusk says he is thinking what the special place in a hell looks like for those who sketched Brexit without a plan on how to carry it. Fucking wow.
Yeah.
Theresa May is such an awkward human being, by the way. She retires in what I understand is an emotional moment, but she cries and runs away like a child who's been told they're grounded. She just strops off at the end there. So make way for Bojo. He says he'll deliver Brexit, unite the country, and defeat Jeremy Corbyn. He's not Darth Vader.
Yeah, but in Trump slash Johnson style politics, that's what it's all about. That is what it's all about. It's all about giving an enemy, so that the little people can just hate on them and not actually worry about what they're doing, in terms of Johnson. So that's why that's particularly jarring when you look at it. But that is exactly why he's put that in there.
It's shit slinging. Like he's trying to put the focus on somebody else so that they've somebody else to blame, and like If it all goes tits up, he'll just say Jeremy Corbyn was like shining his the reflection from his watch in his eyes or something. Like, it's just ridiculous, like the hatred that he's got for this man. But like just to go back a moment, like, first of all, right, Donald Tusk, the first time I ever heard that name, I thought it was a parody of Donald Trump and somebody had drawn him as a walrus. And the special place in hell for those who sketched Brexit without a plan on how to carry it, he does not hold back. He does not give any fucks.
No, he does not. He does not. No, he is very, very safely from a position of power within the EU. So he is saying it how it is.
Oh
He doesn't
yeah.
have to be beholden. I mean, you have to think like obviously with us, like it or not, we do have a special relationship with the UK because they're our closest neighbors and blah 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 blah, right? But in the EU, like this was taken as such a massive affront in mainland Europe that like the UK, who've always been Eurosceptic, and people in on the mainland of Europe have always been skeptical of the UK, and for a lot of reasons to dislike the UK, as we know, and they were really angry at the UK, and they were very angry at what they had done, which was essentially lied to their own people to get Brexit, voted in, and because it was pure populism, had no plan on how to implement it once it came along, so. That is why Donald Tusk is angry.
Yeah.
And obviously we were nearly collateral damage in it, as you can see
Oh
here.
yeah. Yeah, the whole thing with the sea border and you know the hard border in the north and the whole shebang. It was just like it was political football. Like it just back and forth. No, not a fucking clue. And yeah, eventually, rightfully so, Donald Tusk steps in and he's like, "Get your fucking shit together, or none of this is essentially going to happen." And I think the worst case scenario was that they leave the EU without a deal, and eventually Boris does get one through, and you know everything kind of turned up roses really for the UK in the end, you know, to some extent. And we're not really in the firing line as much as we thought we'd be. But as we've discussed plenty of times, you know, you still walk past them with your European passport in your hand and, you know, wave it at them, rightly fucking so. It's their they've made their shit and they've got a lie in it now.
Yeah, well, they are a demonstrably like poorer off nation, not well, like financially, but just as people and as a country and as a society because of what they voted in, because of what they did.
Oh yeah.
That is a fact. And people like, well, I mean, Johnson's gone now, but like people like Farage have to live with that. But the issue is, over there is that the people who'll be shit upon are the poorer people because,
Yeah.
they will have less jobs to go for. There'll be less supports coming from the EU, and a conservative government is not going to support those people.
No.
People like Boris Johnson, Nigel Farage have plenty of money, they'll be fine, but it's the regular, working class people of England who'll be and the UK as a whole who'll be disadvantaged. And what will happen is that UK will break up. That is inevitable. I think it's going to come sooner than you expect as well.
Yeah.
Realistically, Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland, none of them voted for Brexit.
No, you're dead right. It's and I mean like there is a large percentage, it was nearly 50-50. So that means kind of half of the residents of the UK were like, no, I don't want this. But unfortunately they're the ones who have to live with it. And back home we're dealing with our own incompetent criminals, as John Delaney's got some splaining to do when it's revealed that he lent 100,000 euro to the FAI as a result of full-on investigations underway as to how the FAI is funded and financed. TD Imelda Munster takes John Tracy of Sport Ireland, or Sport Ireland, to task, asking him if he has confidence in the FAI at the moment, to which he says, "Well, I'm not saying yes." John Delaney would attend a hearing at the Oireachtas and later resign from the FAI following these investigations. It would later be revealed that the FAI is financially in trouble, as it reveals debts and liabilities of 55 million euro. Finances aside, Dundalk beat Shamrock Rovers to win the league championship. However, in a turnaround, Shamrock Rovers beat Dundalk on penalties to win the first FAI Cup in 32 years, and Ireland scraped by to make it to the Euro 2020 playoffs with Mick McCarthy at the helm. I find this, you know, very hard to kind of think of. So John Delaney had to lend 100,000 euros to the FAI. He lent 100,000 euro to a company that essentially, on paper, should be worth millions. You know, having debts and liabilities of 55 million euro, 100,000 is a like. Why would you need that? Like, that's such a small amount of money in the grand scheme of things to have to ask John Delaney to lend. Like, what the hell were they trying to, like, 100,000 wouldn't get you a new stadium. It probably wouldn't even resurface the AstroTurf.
So what it was about really was that he had created such a hole in the FAI's finances that they needed that money for expenses like salaries to keep people paid, to keep milk in the fridge at the offices, to do all that kind of stuff, pay invoices, because he had drained so much out of it, and they were due, whatever residual money they get for winning matches or for from FIFA or whatever money was due to come wasn't due to come in that month. It wasn't coming in for 6 weeks or 8 weeks. So John Delaney, who had full control, by the way, and like what John Delaney did was he created a total autocracy where he was the only person who really knew what was going on. Everyone else is in the dark, and he got there by in kind of like Game of Thrones fashion or like political fashion, getting rid of the people who would challenge him over the course of the years, because he really came to prominence in like the mid 2000s, like 2002 World Cup. He's a junior player within the FAI, but he kind of rides the controversy of Saipan. There's a lot of political machinations in the background, and you have to remember that at that time the FAI board is an amateur board. It's voluntary. It's like the board of my rugby club. It's just voluntary. It's people who you can get to do the job. So he kind of worms his way up the ranks, and is well liked and well respected, and has this facade of being, a good businessman and knows what he's doing and runs a tight ship and blah blah blah, and essentially just takes control, gets rid of the people who are going to challenge him, gets in some lackeys who won't question him, yes men really, and people who didn't really know what they were doing, and more amateurs who didn't really understand the financial side of things, and ran it like that. And basically, obviously he was getting paid a big salary, which is, he's a CEO of the FA, of a sporting body. I mean, I don't think it was certainly out of line with a lot, but not all. But the most galling thing was that he was spending money hand over fist. Credit card expenses were massive, and he was taking, I mean, he when this was all investigated and discovered, and we see the Sunday Times, front page of Sunday Times, and Mark Tighe did a great job, subsequently wrote a book with Paul Rowan about called Champagne Football, which I'd urge anyone to read, which is all about this. But basically, he was he would have his company credit card, which is supposed to be used like any company credit card for maybe travel expenses or justifiable expenses, and he's taken out cash withdrawals with no reconciliation, just taking lumps of cash out. He had the FAI paying rent for his girlfriend, where she was living. He had the FAI paying his rent on top of his salary. That's all stuff that, very much off the books. But again, there was nobody there to question it, and it was only when information was given to a journalist by an anonymous source, literally landed on Martai's desk, that he peeled back the lid and realized how far it went. And yeah, look, I think Paul Cook, the vice president, says it. There's a chance of liquidation. That's it. We came close, and they're not out of the woods yet, by the way. But they have proper people running it now. But yeah, I mean, came close to dissolving the FAI, dissolving the Football Association of the country, most popular sport in the country. Well, sorry, let's say most popular global sport in Ireland. It's on a par. It's up there with GAA. I mean, there are certain parts of the country where it is football, as in soccer. And yeah, one man nearly brought it down single-handedly. So that's what this is all about. So basically, the 100,000, a long answer to your question, Kieran. The 100,000 was basically to plug a gap so that people wouldn't be alerted to the fact the FAI had no money.
It's mad, like you mentioned it that way, because we talked about it last week, The Wire. But there's a famous quote in The Wire that's like, if you follow drugs, you get drug users and drug dealers. You follow the money, and you don't know where the shit is going to take you. And obviously, like this busted open the dam, and obviously caused John Delaney to resign and everything. And it kind of does gloss over the fact that there are two bigger stories here as well. That the Dundalk beat Shamrock Rovers and they win the league championship, which fair play to them. But then Shamrock Rovers beat Dundalk on penalties to win the first FAI Cup in 32 years, which is a huge achievement by Shamrock Rovers. And also Ireland scraped by to make it into the Euro 2020 playoffs, which it just glosses here that Mick McCarthy is at the helm, which it didn't really go into too much detail previously, but Mick is back in charge, which
Mick is back. Yeah, so Mick came back after the Martin O'Neill era ended with failure to qualify for the 2018 World Cup. The Martin O'Neill, Roy Keane era. Mick McCarthy was drafted in on a big salary. I was just saying the FAI were paying massive salaries to these managers and assistant managers in Roy Keane's case, and including the appointment of one Robbie Keane as a coach alongside Mick McCarthy, who was then subsequently not used by Stephen Kenny and sat on his salary, very generous, large salary, which he was entitled to do. He had a long contract,
Course.
but that was money the FAI didn't have. but he wanted the name recognition of getting a Big Mick and a Robbie Keane in, you know, to keep
Yeah.
the party going. And also because he wanted to qualify for Euro 2020, because qualifying for tournaments is very lucrative.
Of course.
Unfortunately, that playoff that we qualified for here, that was due to be in early 2020, it was eventually postponed till obviously later in the year and early 2021 as the tournament was postponed, and we ended up getting knocked out of that playoff, but not qualifying for the Euros, which of course nearly ended in disaster for Ireland, with England making the final, but thankfully they
Yeah.
lost.
Yes, thank God they did. We'd never hear the end of it.
Yeah, Mick was unceremoniously. So basically what happened was, there was a Mick was brought in, right? The popular choice was Stephen Kenny, who was Dundalk's manager and previously and was the Ireland under-21's manager. And what happened was Kenny was kind of put into the under-21 job and said, when Euro 2020 is finished, then Stephen Kenny will come in. But of course,
Yeah.
there was a contract that said Mick McCarthy ends on a certain date in 2020. Stephen Kenny starts. Pandemic hits. Tournament's delayed. What do you do? Also, we now know the FAI has no money. So what do you do? So in the end, they said to Mick, look, you're gone. And Stephen Kenny came in and oversaw that playoff, which of course didn't go well.
No.
But he has had to do a lot of turning around. But it looks like Ireland are on an upward trajectory on the football pitch finally. Thank you. And a lot of young
Yeah.
players coming to the fore slowly but surely.
Yeah, it does look like we are on a bit of an upward, an incline, I suppose. It's kind of reminiscent of the Ireland of old, essentially. We're slowly but surely getting back to the glory days of the early, late 90s, early 2000s. So
Well, hopefully, yeah.
hopefully, onwards and upwards. Father Martin McGill next, as he discusses the unity in the community against violence. But he asks as to why it takes the death of a 29-year-old woman with her whole life in front of her to see politicians in attendance, which receives a standing ovation. This, of course, is as a result of the death of journalist Lyra McCree during a riot involving dissident Republicans. She was indirectly or directly, we're not sure, still shot and killed as a result at this riot. Yeah, the priest there, Father McGill, gets a standing ovation, but you can see the awkward look on the faces of people like Leo Varadkar. Like, he's the last one to stand up because he's not sure if he should. Which, you know, obviously the death of Lyra was quite tragic. Obviously, it really did shock, you know, I suppose the country, in the sense that it was very reminiscent of the Troubles, and this is still happening. And yeah, the priest was very right to point out to the clergy that it takes the death of somebody where there's publicity involved for journalists who actually come to that neck of the woods.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, like, you look at the picture here as they slowly stand up, and I mean, you've got, obviously it focused initially on Arlene Foster and Mary Lou McDonald and Michelle O'Neill from Sinn Féin sitting side
Yeah.
by side. And I think that was what the point the priest was making initially, that, you know, politicians from all sides and from
Yeah.
everywhere. I didn't even notice until much later that Theresa May is sitting beside Leo Varadkar,
Yeah.
obviously Prime Minister at the time, and Leo Varadkar Taoiseach at the time. Catherine Zapone is behind, who was the Minister for something, I can't remember, in that government, children, I
Children,
think.
yeah.
And actually Jeremy Corbyn is in the row behind her, which I didn't notice till right now,
Oh.
but because I'm looking at it, but and there's probably others that I don't recognise there, but yeah, I mean, look, very well put by Father McGill. Like, very awkward for the politicians, and I understand
Yeah.
the awkward faces, and no one's quite sure. And unfortunately, I think for Leo, he and Theresa May are probably quite far up the row here, so they don't see that, like, Mary Lou and Arlene, although I notice Arlene doesn't clap at any point, and it's probably the only one who doesn't. But I won't be too harsh on any of them, because it's very awkward, because that is directed at them,
Yeah.
you know, and it's kind of a dig, but, like, it's also a bit unfair in that, like, I mean, you know, it's a dissident republic riot. You know, I'm not sure what politicians really can do about it, but you know, in the moment, but there is a wider point there, obviously, but
Yeah.
around the division of the community in Northern Ireland. And I think that's why the camera was focusing on Arlene and Mary Lou initially, and Michelle O'Neill, because they're obviously front and centre in that. But yeah, very awkward all around, but a well-made point by Father McGill, which obviously nothing has changed
No.
since, as we know. But maybe if we're reviewing this in 10 years' time, Kieran, you know, that maybe things have changed. But that's one of the things about Reeling in the Years. We've mentioned it before. Your perspective does change as the years go on, and things, events take on a different hue. And, you know, if you'd watched the 1968 episode in 1999 when it came out, or 2000 or whenever it was, 2005 when those that 60 series came out. You know, your perspective of events then will actually have changed when you watch it now in 2022. So, you know, it is constantly changing. So hopefully, maybe when people are watching this episode in future, maybe things have sorted themselves out. Maybe politicians have, you know, put aside their petty loyalties in the north for the greater good, although I won't hold my breath on that.
Yeah, something tells me Brexit will play into that too. This year we'll see the beginning of a new wave of protests in Hong Kong as hundreds of thousands take to the streets as they oppose plans to legalize extradition to mainland China. We also see the evidence of mass detention camps and prisons in China emerging as tensions grow surrounding the security of the guarantees made to Hong Kong. Around 1 million, I can never pronounce the word, I think it's Uyghur Muslims and other minorities are held in these camps without legal rights. Initially, China would deny the existence. However, they own up and call them re-education camps. So basically, China being China, you know, I remember like the kind of it's weird because this protest was very technology heavy because China and Hong Kong would use facial recognition software and to mark protesters essentially. And so, you know, so they would be able to match them against the country's database, I suppose, and find out who they are and, you know, clamp down on these people. And the protesters in Counter Act, somebody 3D printed essentially these anti-facial recognition masks. So it's just mad how these things kind of come about. Of course, these protests are still going on, although not as media heavy these days, but they're still going on, and China are still denying the existence essentially of these what are effectively, you know, concentration camps where people are detained without legal rights and the sort of under the radar you know, mass genocide of these particular Muslims in China. So it's, you know, here we are, like this topic seems to happen every 10 years just in a different part of the world, and here we are in 2019 and it's still going on.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very, I mean, it's, I know China is a communist country, but it's very communist. You know, re-education camps, that's like something out of Soviet Russia, you know, to us, you know, and the Cold War. So it is very jarring. And yeah, look, it just shows, I mean, look, the world is a horrible place to be honest, you know, and that's another example of it. You know, and again, more minorities being persecuted around the world, which is, you know,
Yeah, it's not
we
a
see all too much of in these shows.
exactly. There you go. You hit the nail on the head. It just pops up every so often. I remember back in the 1960s, where we reviewed, I think it was in Rwanda. And you know, it just, you know, then obviously it you know, we saw the persecution of minorities essentially in Ireland with the, you know, the relocation of Catholics from Derry. And then of course, you know, you see other places around the world, like we, you know, saw the Bosnian War, etc. So it's one of those things just keeps happening. There's kind of no stopping it. And in Essex, a lorry carrying 39 Vietnamese people who traveled illegally into the UK is discovered with all 39 deceased in the back. An investigation would reveal a large smuggling ring responsible, largely run by Irish criminals. I remember this being massive news at the time, obviously, because this sort of thing never really happens. Obviously, people sneak into the country undetected pretty much every day. But with the people deceased in the back of the lorry, the lorry driver of that truck, it's up in the air whether he knew or didn't know that there was people in the back, because he was only, I think, like a 29-year-old or something from Tyrone, who basically denied any responsibility, didn't know what he was ferrying in. But then evidence came to light that essentially he did know. So it's very all up in the air. But it's tragic that these people who were trying to seek a better life, essentially, and I mean, look, I don't mean to sound, you know, too particular, but when you hear of people sneaking into the country illegally, you know, your first thought is often of Eastern European people, because that's you know, you see it on, you know, TV shows where they come across the border from France on the back of lorries, you know, or often people from Middle Eastern countries. But Vietnamese people, you never, you know, that would never be like if somebody said name, you know, a nationality which is known for, you know, sort of sneaking into the UK in a truck, you wouldn't think Vietnamese people. So it's kind of, I guess, shocking, you know, anybody dying in the back of a lorry, but it's just it strikes me as a particularly odd situation.
Yeah, it is, and I mean it's, yeah, you're right, like it's shocking, I guess, the number of people that were in there and obviously that died. Yeah, I mean we've spoken before about like what these people go through just to try and get a better, you know, a better life, is Oh, it's just awful. And yeah, this is an example of where it goes really wrong. And
Yeah.
unfortunately, people lose their lives, which is sickening, really.
Certainly is. So with that on, with that in mind, rather, we are halfway through the show. So we are about to hit our final ever Simon Says. So are you ready? You know the rules, 30 seconds, three questions. You ready for the last ever Simon Says?
I'm going to try and redeem myself for all the past ones. So yes, let's go.
Alrighty. So, and here we go. So, which Leeds player had the highest appearances this year, but only one goal?
Liam Cooper.
Nope, Benjamin White. I got married this year. What month?
Jenny. June.
September. And what day did 2019 start on?
Tuesday.
Yes, you got that one right. A
Come on.
Tuesday.
It's
Yeah.
a 1 in 7 guess.
Yeah, that's true. Yes, Benjamin White, he only scored one goal and I had the highest number of appearances. I can't off the top of my head remember how many appearances, but he was the highest.
He had a lot, yeah. Ben White, he was on loan from Brighton, now plays for Arsenal.
Oh,
My English.
there you go. And yes, I got married in September just
Well,
before.
congratulations.
Well, yeah.
Anniversary coming up.
Yes, it is actually. We're going to celebrate by going to Dublin to see Joanne McNally, so it's not really much of a celebration, to be honest.
John's great.
I don't really like her, to be honest. I just find her very. I don't know. I don't know. Look, she's funny. I'll give it. Maybe, do you know what it is? It's because my wife listens to the her and Vogue Williams podcast every
Oh,
single
yeah, right.
day.
I don't listen to that.
Yeah, and it's just very grating. But I'm sure. Look, comedy is comedy. It's in Vicker Street, which is a great venue. So we're going up for the night and staying in the Phoenix Park Hotel. So I mean, hey, look, a night away is a night away, right? So with that in mind, and speaking of final things, we are now on to our final Simon's favorite Twitter page. So I'm expecting big things this week, pal. What you got?
Okay, so I've actually got two.
Ah, yes.
Right, because the reason being that, excuse me, that one is more of a visual one, so it's not going to be particularly
Okay.
kind of well, not appealing, but useful to people who are listening to this. But obviously, they can go and look at it in their own time. So I'll go with that one first, right? So that is a page which people probably will be familiar with. It's called Reeling in the Weird. It also continues
Oh, yes.
our theme, which. Is reeling in the years, so it's a nice little pun, like our one. But yeah, so reeling in the weird, reeling in the weird is a collection of archive videos from RTE. Well, it says old Irish television broadcast. I think there might have the odd bit of TV3, but it's pretty much obviously going to be RTE. So obviously, I can't play the videos for you. I'm sure there are copyright issues, and John O'Regan is yet to contact us. So I'll just read the titles of what's on this page for people's amusement. So the most recent one, actually, we spoke about Gay Byrne being a trailblazer on the Late Late Show. So this is Grizzly Bear on the Late Late Show in 1984.
It's like Gentle Ben from The Simpsons.
Yeah, basically. So I don't know if anyone's ever watched this video, they should, but it is essentially a Gentle Ben type bear. A woman's kind of sitting there feeding him, and I do believe there is another clip, yes, where the handler of the bear wrestles him on stage in the Late Late Show. So one people should definitely check that out. Gay Byrne gets close, but not too close to this giant bear. This is something that will not be allowed to happen on television now. Another video is which I haven't actually seen, is titled The Ballybunion Bachelor Contest.
Oh, Lord.
And
Oh.
I've just played the video here. Early doors, there is a lot of men of varying physiques in briefs on stage here. And it being 1977, there are some epic sideburns involved. So I would,
Oh, my God. I'm
and
looking at it
I
now.
haven't actually clicked into this video ever, so I don't know what's being said in the background, but I can only imagine it's hilariously amusing. One must remember that Father Ted is essentially based on these types of videos.
Yeah.
So that's the Ballybunion Bachelor Contest. I'll just give you one or two more. So there is the Worst Singer in Ireland auditions, which I would advise anyone to listen to on mute because they are really bad. that's from 1982. And there are a couple of 90s ones for those who like 90s nostalgia, like Making a Girl Band. There was also one which I saw earlier on. Oh yes, Boyzone besieged by fans in 1995. They're on the Den with Ian Dempsey or some kind of show with Ian Dempsey, and there are a lot of mid-90s grungy-looking teenage girls flocking to the RTE studios. And
Oh
like,
my
it's
God.
essentially Owen McLove. It's essentially the grannies
It
outside the cranky little
is.
parochial house. Like, that's essentially what it is. So, and this, of course, was the year Father Ted was released. So, I'm not sure was this actually the inspiration for that, but yes, some very questionable 90s style on the young ladies in question as well. And
Wow.
one girl has one of those baggies, mid-90s hats on, but she's also got those really skinny headphones, which are clearly probably attached to a Walkman or something, but like
Right.
they're very 90s as well. Like they're the ones that just
Oh,
like
yeah.
sit on the ear. Like they're not the bigger headphones of now. So that's just a taste of Reeling in the Weird. That's at Reeling Weird. And I felt I had to give them a shout out at some
Yeah.
point. Also, their header or their kind of banner picture is a fantastic picture of Jerry Ryan, Derek Davis, and Pat Kenny in, I want to say, the late 80s, which is both excellent and haunting in equal measure.
Wow. And I'd like to actually point out one that you didn't point out, that that's actually my favorite title of all time and video to accompany it, which is now Taking a Child for a Swim, 1971. And it's a child swimming in the ocean where a man is he effectively walking him on a lead. It's interesting to say the least.
Yeah, that's very, very early, very 70s,
Yes.
or that type of era. But yeah, so that's Reeling in the Weird. Now, the main event of the
Okay.
evening is a popular page which everyone will, I'm surely, have heard of. There's actually books about this as well, but I couldn't let it pass. I want to do some Irish ones as well. I've got a few English ones recently. This is Overheard in Dublin.
Oh,
That's
yes.
at Overheard Dublin. And Overheard in Dublin, for anyone who doesn't know, is I'll read it the bio. It's a collection of conversations, quotes, and anecdotes overheard in and around Dublin. Very, very active on Twitter. Has been on Twitter since 2011. It doesn't actually 18,000 tweets. The last of which was just 5 minutes ago. Anyone who doesn't know, we're recording on the day that a Krispy Kreme has been opened in the former Central Bank building in Dublin.
Right.
So that is a public building now, and it's been redone. So there's going to be shops on the ground floor, and I think offices above it. And the first shop to open there is Krispy Kreme, the donut shop, which has just opened today. This quote was overheard in Dublin today. I see they finally put a proper roof on the Central Bank. That's something the Vikings failed to do, which is, an interesting one. The page itself, right? Every ice cream is a choc ice to me da.
Well, that's actually quite interesting because a lot of people refer to certain things as the brand as opposed to the actual product. I mean, if you think about it, like nobody ever calls like in Ireland, we don't call it a vacuum, we call it a Hoover, and Hoover is a brand.
Well, there you go. There you go. That's true. That's true. And some people do say potatoes for crisps, and people do say
Yeah.
choc ices for ice creams. On the 2nd of August, the overheard in Dublin was in Dunn Stores. Man balancing half a dozen items drops a carton of eggs. Cashier, why didn't you take a basket? He exclaims, because I'm a man, a silly man.
Oh fuck, I think we've all been there.
Yeah, yeah, we have all been there, and it is correct. It is correct. It is something that all men do at times. Mostly I do forget the bags and then go, ah, I could probably carry everything.
Yeah.
You can't carry everything.
No.
Okay, overheard in Dublin on the 24th of June. Crumlin Shopping Centre wasn't built in a day. In fact, they never finished it.
They're not.
I have no idea, actually.
Yeah, Crumlin is. I wouldn't be able to find it on a map, but we've plenty of shopping centers down here that were never finished, so I'll take the word for it.
Yeah, well, that's it. I would imagine I would imagine it's accurate, based on this. Woman buying a bag of ice in Super Value Rathgar, Rathgar being a pretty plush suburb of Dublin.
Right.
Cashier, you have the right idea, woman. Oh, it's not for me. I'm putting them in my pond for the fish.
Oh,
That
Christ.
was during the July heat wave. And a famous one here, also from that day. Again, it was this July 18th was the day before last week, where the highest temperature was recorded in this century or whatever. Overheard in Dublin, the two best days of the year in Ireland: Christmas and summer.
Anyway, we got a good run this year. We got a good run. It's been more than a
It's
day.
an oldie but a goodie. Yeah, no, we did, in fairness, we did. We got a good run of it. Not so great now, obviously, but that's just, I think, pathetic fallacy, the weather in keeping with the sad news that we are at the end of our run here.
Yeah.
I'll leave you with this one, which is comes from July. It's from July 11th, and it's in reaction to the news that we would be getting a heat wave the following week, which you've just discussed. A hot plume coming from England. Sounds like the Brits are farting on us.
Oh, that's nasty. Although
Yeah.
they always are farting on us somehow,
When they're not
bastards.
shitting on us, they're farting on us. So there you go. That's Overheard in Dublin at Overheard Dublin, and Reeling in the Weird at Reeling Weird.
That's yeah, those are two great ones to go out on, I'll be honest. I know I have seen a couple of those overheard in wherever. I did there was one years ago, I don't know whether it was actually a page or whether somebody I knew posted it, but when I was going up and down to Limerick and I have a few friends in Limerick, either somebody posted or it was one of those pages, and it was like overheard on the bus to Rathkeel. If the bus gets any more expensive out of the prison, I'm just gonna have to leave them. Which I thought which I thought was just fantastic. It pretty much
Well,
just summed it up.
practical.
Practical, exactly. So up next, we're pounding the pavement as the nurses go on strike. It's the first major strike in 20 years. It will go to the labour court before a deal would finally be reached. In keeping with protest, we also see farmers putting their feet on the ground as they're picketing the meat factories in a dispute over falling prices. As Fran McNulty says, the €12 steak he bought, the farmers only get around 20%. Later, they would take a protest to the streets of Dublin in their tractors as they demand action over falling incomes and protection for their livelihoods. So, the nurses and the farmers, two groups which are known to protest, farmers more so, but the nurses going on the first big major strike in 20 years. I think one woman there summed it up perfectly that, we help the patients, so please help us. There are two sections of Irish lives which are essentially always getting the short end of the deal. They're always getting the raw end and the short end of the stick. Nurses are incredible people and deserve to be paid a hell of a lot more than what they're on. And without farmers, we would all be hungry, naked, and sober. So, I mean, we should all invest in farming before they take their tractors back to Dublin and we're all screwed. I remember when they did picket the meat plants because my wife was actually at the time working in a meat, well, she wasn't working in a meat factory, she was catering. Working in a catering company in a meat factory, and she would go in every day, and they would block her at the gate until, she said, "No, I work for the catering company," and they would let her in because they were blocking workers, delivery trucks,
Yeah.
everybody, and it did cause chaos. I'm not sure the outcome if they actually did eventually get a price hike, but they were right, I suppose, to because essentially, if you're farming, right, you're self-employed, but you also you have stakeholders essentially. Well, that'd be ironic, stakeholders. But essentially, you do. You're selling your produce. You're buying from somebody else or what have you. So essentially, you are a sole trader. But there are people out there who are getting paid more, than you essentially, because it is an expensive trade. And if it's just an increase that they're like they say that they're getting, the meat factory says they're getting a higher percentage, but the farmers say they're only getting around 20%, which, I mean, if you think about it, like if you go in to like, I know you really shouldn't buy fucking meat that's a euro, but like if you go into your pound shop, right, and there's meatballs in a tin. Now, I know the fucking meatballs in the tin, they definitely didn't come from an Irish cow, but if they did, like 20% of like 149 is nothing for a poor old farmer.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like it's nothing. It's just such a hard becoming such a hard living, really. And they're so important. The production of this food. I don't think people realize, like people in cities and people who just consume in supermarkets don't really think about where their food is coming from, and also the environmental effects. And in fact, farming gets a very negative rap when it comes to, talk about, greenhouse gases and all that kind of thing. And it's like, it's really not that detrimental to the climate in comparison to celebrities jetting everywhere or politicians jetting everywhere or, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, farmers, we've seen it throughout. I mean, this is, if you're playing Reeling in the Years bingo at home, Kieran, an old favorite of ours, farmers protesting is definitely up there.
Oh, 100%. Absolutely. If I didn't lose the file for the ding ding noise, then we'd be all over this.
Bring it back.
In the States, the Democrats are looking to impeach Trump as they suspect he would be making attempts to illegally influence the election the following year. The case they have made is that he stated he would provide military aid to Ukraine if they investigated Joe Biden for him. Like, how dirty was this bastard? Like, I mean, oh, just like it try like they tried to impeach him and they didn't say they didn't remove him from power, but at the same time, from that point onwards, this is where it all started to fall apart, I think, for Donald. And of course, we know on January 6th when they, you know, ransacked the Capitol. You know, the case they're making there that he provide military aid for Ukraine if they investigated Joe Biden for him, which is just like, I mean, you cannot get any more Donald Trump than that, can you?
No, not at all. And I mean, it just sums the guy up. He's been ruining the last few episodes of this series for me. But yeah, I mean, look, he, like, his reaction to it was just to try and get a witch hunt going, you know, on Joe Biden, on Nancy Pelosi. That's still going on now. Like, he's still, I think, Eric Trump or Donald Trump Jr., one of them, I think it was Eric Trump, tweeted just the other day about Nancy Pelosi, and they were celebrating Dick Cheney's daughter, who is a Republican, but ran an anti-Trump campaign and was a contributor to the investigation to January 6th. She lost her seat because of it, and they were all crowing about it. And like, it's just there's no lows to which this man won't sink.
Yeah, nothing really surprises me anymore, even now with the whole the documents that he took to his condo. Like, there's just nothing this man does that just surprises people anymore. Francis and Patrick Donnelly win big with Northern Ireland's biggest ever Euromillions jackpot of £114.9 million. Great people, as they've since donated a large portion of that to various charities. Down south, the biggest jackpot is also claimed here as one lucky winner scoops €175.4 million. As shop owner Les Riley says, he was shocked to get the call. Of course you fucking would be. Jesus Christ, what an amount of money that is. I mean, only recently we had that jackpot that just refused to be won, and eventually somebody won it. I mean, even a slice of that would see you right for a while.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, like, you mentioned the Connolly North. I mean, that was, you know, they seem like really down to earth people, and you don't begrudge people like that winning. No. Although it's obviously an excessive amount of money and no one could really need it. I mean, they've obviously given, as you said, large chunks, tens of millions, it says there, to charity, which is great. And what should be done, really, you can't tell people what to do with their money, but you know, you don't need €175 million. You know,
yeah,
you can get by pretty comfortably with a few million, and you could do what they did and just give a portion of it even to charity. But I'm sure not everyone does it. But I'm sure, I don't know what the people in the Knoll did, because they didn't go public, because we quite rightly protect we offer the anonymity to people if they want it. Which I think is a good thing.
Absolutely, yeah.
We spoke about Dolores McNamara back in the 2005 episode. She was the first like big Euromillions winner in Ireland, and she was besieged with people looking for money for this and that and the other. And you can't help everybody. But at the same time, you can do a lot of good with it. And those Connollys did it, and possibly the people in you'd like to think the people in Dublin did as well. But yeah, I mean, the shopkeeper, I guess, or the shop owner, who's actually quite a young fella.
Yeah.
You know, because they get a bit of money, don't they, for selling the ticket?
They get a portion of it, yeah.
A bit of money off the lottery or whatever. So it's a big jackpot for them as well. You know, but yeah, great excitement, I think, especially when it's like a small kind of community shop, you know, that sells it. It's kind of nice, you know.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, absolutely. Like I said, I'd be fucking thrilled with even just a portion of that. And you know, you'd like to be able to say that you'd give a lot away to charity. You could solve a lot of problems with 114 million quid.
Oh, yeah.
And my second favorite show next, it is what it is. Love Island is the TV hit this year, as Longford woman Maura Higgins is the standout contestant this year. However, another Irish contestant, Greg O'Shea, would also do well, as he went on to be co-winner of the show. The two take to the Late Late to show, basically to say, we used to be poor, but now we're not. Pure gas. Yeah, that's just, God, it's like watching California, isn't it? Like,
yeah, Greg O'Shea was only in there like 2 weeks, wasn't he? He just
somewhere,
like,
yeah.
Get in there at the end. Yeah, I mean, like, Greg O'Shea is a rugby player. That's how I know him. Or he was. He played for the Ireland Sevens team, and he was in Munster's various underage setups. But yeah, look, I have a lot of Love Island is one of those things. I've never really watched Love Island at all, and I'm not one of those people who looks down on people for watching it. I understand it's great to use that phrase, bubblegum TV, and that you don't have to think
Yeah.
about it, just disengage your brain and watch it. I was a big Brother fan back in its heyday, so I'm not going to start looking down on people for liking Love Island. I do have issues around any reality shows and those images that they put out there and the unrealistic
Yeah.
expectations that the show may give, particularly younger viewers. But it was certainly piqued the interest in 2019 to have two Irish people in it. And I think Maura Higgins became a bit of a national treasure,
Oh, yeah.
which is great because she went in there and like I do think, and again, look, I hold the hands up. I haven't seen a huge amount of any series of Love Island, but my impression from the outside is that you get a lot of fakeness. You get a lot of people who aren't particularly who are playing a game or maybe
Yeah.
aren't really real. From what I saw of Maura Higgins, she went in there and she was herself, her authentic, me mammy's over there and she paid me rent, that like that, she was real. And I think that's why people liked her and respected her. And I think in
Yeah.
general, people go on these shows, if they actually just act like themselves, a lot of the time people will just like them.
Yeah, they're actually working on a new series at the moment, and it's like Love Island, and it's going to be for single people who are in their 40s and 50s. Which I think that just like as long as they're like not, like 40 and 50-year-old people who look like they're 20 and the Botox and the muscles and the whole shebang. Like I want like your 40s, 50s, maybe even 60-year-olds from the pub, like out of shape, smoke 20 a day, like sitting by the pool, like trying to crack on. I think that would be fantastic. And they're bringing back Big Brother next year as well. So
Yes.
who knows? That could be our next big podcast venture. You never know.
Who knows?
And up next, a young lady in pink sings a song I've never heard of, but it's catchy, so I won't lie. And in the Gaelic football, the Dublin men's team beat Kerry 118 to 15 points as they claim an unprecedented five in a row. And in the LGFA, the Dublin women's footballers make it three in a row as they beat Galway 2-3 to 4 points, as we see quite the fanfare. So you alluded to this earlier. It was the big double for Dublin, essentially. So great celebrations all round.
Yeah, although it was of course the third Dublin in a row because
Well, yeah.
Dublin's men's team had won five in a row and Dublin's women's team were winning three in a row. And at that point, it did feel like in both men's and women's football that like it was like, God, is anyone ever going to win one again? It felt like this remorseless winning machine,
Yeah.
and there was a lot of debate about whether Dublin should be split up, whether there was too much money going into the game in Dublin, all the rest of it. But of course, these things are cyclical, and the men's team have not won the last 2 years, and neither have the women's team. It is cyclical, and a lot of the time it's just a lot of things aligning. For example, the women's team had a great generation of players who have kind of passed through now, and not all of
Yeah.
them are playing anymore, and they've just lost that little edge. And the same with the men's team. Like the men's team, as those older players started to drop off in the last couple of years, they couldn't maintain the standards. And of course, the other thing is when you win that many competitions in a row, whether you're getting football, hurling, soccer, rugby, whatever it is, when you become the target, everyone else looks at what you're doing
Yeah.
and tries to get to that level. And like take Kerry, for example, this Kerry team now have won their first All Ireland this year, 2022, having lost in 2019. The likes of David Clifford, who's best player in the country, they could go on and be a dynasty. But there are several other teams also who've taken steps up. Tyrone obviously won one the year before, and there's other teams there in the mix. So it's like a much more even playing field now because
Yeah.
Dublin raised the bar for everyone, and now they've reached it. And the same in the women's game. So while it was bemoaned at the time because it was boring to watch them win every year, it does raise the standards as a whole. You see that with the Premier League. Like look at Man City and Liverpool. Like Man City raised the bar. Liverpool have got up to it, and that's a really top competition there.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's the best football you'll see, club football you'll see in the world, I think,
Yeah.
because the best players are in it. And that's all to do with raising standards and raising the bar. Obviously, some teams get left behind, like
United.
a certain banter club. My point being that these teams, although it's frustrating sometimes, even with City, like you kind of look at it and go, God, the league could already be over after
Yeah.
two games as we speak. Feel free to play this back to me in May, but at the same time, teams, someone else will come up and get to the level as well, whether it's a Chelsea or a Spurs or whoever it is. And in a few years, it might be a three-way or four-way competition, but it's going to be at this level, which is great.
Absolutely. No, it is. It's like I said, it's cyclical. I think that kind of actually happened Waterford as well, where they were on the up and up under Derek McGrath, and they kind of implemented a really swarm or sweeper system. And you know, eventually other teams caught on and it all fucking crumbled. So again, it's just one of those things where it, you know, like you say, it is cyclical, and eventually, you know, it's going to be somebody else's turn. And you know, we could have a Leicester on our hands. Like, you could see, I don't know, fucking Antrim winning the All-Ireland next year. So that's what you love about the sport. It's unpredictable.
Absolutely.
And up next, oh shit, Bojo got his hands on a bulldozer. Run, children. The machinery carrying the sign "Get Brexit Done" is seen crashing through a wall, being driven by the new PM. Eventually, he does get Brexit done. After months of hostile negotiations, a new Brexit deal is reached. The agreement would see the backstop replaced with a national customs border in the Irish Sea. Leo says there will always be a place for the UK at the table if they choose to come back. However, there is a spanner in the works, as the DUP also refused to back Boris Johnson's deal. Parliament is still up in arms over the whole thing, so as a result, Boris calls for a general election. The Conservatives win by a landslide and can now move forward with a clear Tory majority. He calls for prosperity, growth and hope, and of course the eventual demise of Jeremy Corbyn, for good measure. It's just...
He certainly wants to get rid of Corbyn.
He does.
This is crazy, right? Yeah. But I mean, it actually worked out well, because... obviously, one of the big things that we've seen over the last few episodes was that because Conservatives were in a minority government relying on DUP support, they couldn't force through that border in the sea, in the Irish Sea, because the DUP were like, obviously, because they only ever say no, we're like, no, no, no.
Yeah.
And you can understand why, because they're a unionist party and that was essentially splitting them away from the rest of the union, the glorious union, as they would say. You know, and you can understand why. So, Boris Johnson getting a landslide victory and a Conservative majority government, freeing himself of the shackles of the DUP, was at once both a terrible thing and actually an okay thing for us, because it made it, that part of it, a lot simpler. Didn't mean we had to enforce a border on our island, which for us would have just been, in the Republic, would have just been an awful thing, because you'd essentially be cutting off nationalists in that community. And cutting your own island too. And obviously the long-term goal of this country is to have a united Ireland of some shape or form. So, although you wouldn't know it sometimes with some of the people we have in charge, but that is, you know, fundamentally that has to be our long-term goal as a nation.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's going to take a lot of, as you can see from all these latest episodes, it's going to take a lot of work with DUP to get us to that station.
Yeah, and that ain't easy working with them. It's not often you do see a politician basically call an election on themselves to basically say, well, you don't like me, fucking go vote, and then ends up winning with a clear majority. Which, I mean, look, as stupid as Boris can be, fucking, I guess, fair play to him.
Yeah, part of it was the Trump-style misinformation campaign that
well,
went out there about Jeremy Corbyn. You know, he did actually defeat Jeremy Corbyn, as he said he wanted to. Because Corbyn is no longer the leader of Labour, of course. And that was mostly down to, like, he put out that he was anti-Semitic, and you know, they did a great job of just taking away a core Labour vote, because they painted it as, well, we're going to get Brexit done. And a lot of those rural communities and working class communities in the north of England, which had always voted Labour, had voted for Brexit because they that line about the immigrants and, you know, counter immigration and taking back the NHS, all that stuff, right? That really played to them. So this was actually logical next step, was they said, well, you've already voted with us the Brexit, because the Brexiteers have won in the Conservatives. Boris Johnson's a Brexiteer, he's now in power. Theresa May, David Cameron were not, they wanted to remain, right? So now the Brexiteers are in power, so they're going to these people and saying, look, you've never voted Conservative in your life, but you're gonna, you know, you're voting for us now. And that's where this landslide comes from. And that has totally changed the political system in the UK, because those people never would have voted Conservative. Conservative, the party of Maggie Thatcher, who shut down all their industry up in those parts of the country. You know, those people would never, ever, ever have voted for Conservatives. Conservatives barely ran in any of those constituencies. And now they've won a load of them. And it's one of the first times ever that's ever happened, where those people have flipped and suddenly the Conservatives have a massive majority. Now, they're doing a great job of ruining it by being idiotically incompetent, don't get me wrong, but you know, it was big political upheaval, and we've just seen the destabilization of a country over the last five or six episodes, which is pretty frightening.
Yeah, walking into the UK, it's a lot like walking into an office where all the fucking papers are everywhere. You know, it's just an absolute mess. But it'll, you know, the next few years is gonna show exactly what a big mistake they've made and how they'll end up tidying up said papers. But As I say, time will tell. And we see Greta Thunberg on stage now as she's addressing the United Nations on climate change. She's the champion for global climate change amongst young people. And it's a call which is answered by hundreds of young people around Ireland as they too protest in response, demanding change in climate actions. We also got a nice shot of Waterford kids skipping school there. And the look she gives Donald Trump as well, which is just absolutely iconic.
That was so iconic, yeah.
That was the best moment of that year. And from the young to the old, 92-year-old David Attenborough, who we must protect at all costs, says that we need to sort ourselves out in the next decade or we're dooming our children and our grandchildren, which is kind of, you know, we're in the middle of a heat wave, essentially. Like, it still hasn't gone away. And we're just seeing such rapid change in weather. And obviously, these young people, you know, they've had enough, essentially. And I kind of think about it in a sense that, right, so nowadays we've got things like, you know, paper, like, it sounds silly, right? Paper straws when you go to your when you go to your takeaway or whatever, which you still have to pierce through a plastic lid, but I digress. You know, you've got this generation is using travel mugs and recyclable and reusable things. You know, we're upcycling and we're seeing all of these positive changes, but it's a little bit too little too late, and it's something that the generations before us even should have done. And now these kids are unfortunately reaping the cost of that. And you know, while they can protest and what have you, it's all about getting the government to listen, essentially, and to make actual change. And when you've got this year in particular, countries like America pulling out of the Paris Climate Agreement, and you know, even like we discussed earlier with our Green Party being like, hey, everybody should cycle to work, and everybody here being like, you know what, Eamon Ryan, why don't you go fuck yourself? You know, it's just, it's unfortunate. Like, again, to quote The Wire, makes me sick, motherfucker, how far we done fell. Yeah. Like, it is nuts. Like, I mean, climate change is a topic I could go on and on and on and on about. But it is good to see, you know, the young people out actually caring now. Hey, look, if that was me when I was 16, I'd be like, yeah, boy, free day off school. Wouldn't care what the cause I was campaigning for was. But it is good to see the voices, you know, and it's certainly still at the forefront of people's minds, I think, now more so than ever.
Yeah, and it should be. And I mean, like, yeah, you're dead right. Like, it is, it's a massive issue. It is David Attenborough's 92 at the time that he spoke here. He ain't going to be around in 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, 100 years, whenever it is. But it's for the young people. It's for our kids and their kids. Like, that's who it's for. And people have, that's the reason that people don't take action, because it seems so far away, but it's not. You're dead right. You can see it. Like, if you even look at it like we do through the prism of reading of the year. So in 1976, we saw a report about a heat wave. Okay, yeah. 1976. We didn't really see one again until I think 1995, and then we saw a report, an RT report in 2018. But if you think about the storms, even in this last series, we saw, you know, reference of Storm Ophelia, Beast from the East. All those various storms, the flooding we've seen over the last say 20 episodes, we see flooding a lot of the time. Heavy rain, like, people still think that phrase global warming. They think, oh, the world's going to get hotter. The world is getting hotter, but what it actually means is just a lot more unsettled weather, a lot more weather events. You know, a lot of melting ice caps and, you know, garbage islands floating around the sea and animals dying out because their habitats are being taken away.
Yeah.
And what that does to an ecosystem, what that does to a planet like ours. And we are going to make this planet unlivable, and it's going to be a lot quicker than people think. And like, you know, people are already dying as a result of weather events.
Yeah, no, and especially crazy things like, you know, Lake Mead in Las Vegas is drying up, and it's churning up the people that the mafia put in barrels. And, you know, there's no sign of that water ever coming back. And like, I think about it in a very simplistic term, because I've often had to sit down with, particularly with elderly relatives, and explain to them, you know, why it's so important. And I think about it this way. If I am born into my house and my kitchen is always on fire, and my father says to me, Oh yeah, no, the kitchen's been on fire the last few years, but when I was a boy, it was only an oven fire, and we didn't really mind it too much. Does that mean I have to be comfortable with the fact that when I live in that house and I have my daughter on my knee, and I'm going to say, "Oh, you know, that kitchen's been on fire since I was a child," but when my father was a boy, it was only an oven fire, and so on. Am I going to be content to let her live in a house with an oven fire, or should I do my best to put it out? You know, you should probably do your best to put it out and reverse what damage you can. But unfortunately, it's just a case of we kind of have to wait, I think, another maybe 20, 30 years before we have a large population of people who actually believe in actively trying to reverse the damage that has been done before. Up next, we see Dermot Kennedy with Outnumbered, definitely the biggest Irish artists, certainly of 2019 and definitely today. Fantastic artist. Although, funny enough, my brother-in-law was just talking to him today, said he saw him in Australia and said he wasn't great. But, you know, yeah, it's kind of disappointing. But no, I've seen him, particularly his live version of Raglan Road that he did on Grafton Street. Fantastic.
Yes, an excellent voice.
Indeed. And finally, as the world celebrates the end of the decade and we march into the 20s, amid the celebrations, we see the headline: China probes mystery pneumonia outbreak amid SARS fears. I'm sure nothing will come of that.
This was so ominous and it was so good. And everyone was wondering how Feeling in the Years would end this series and would they make reference to COVID? Because it obviously wasn't even called COVID by the time this year ended, but it had just about started. And I thought this is really. Yeah, a really interesting way. Just a little line about it. Just a little thing to say. This is, you know, a classic Reeling in the Years knowing reference to just this is coming, and that's all we're going to say about it. And of course, we had a very clever one. You'll remember the Ebola outbreak in 2014, and Barack Obama speaking about it, and talking about how, you know, this was going to be. We're going to see more and more pandemics, and we have to be ready for it. And you know, little did anyone know that there was one coming around the corner not too long in the future. And yeah, we obviously all know what happened in the next. Well, I mean, it's still a part of our lives. I was stricken with COVID when we recorded our 28 our 2017 episode. But yeah, you know, it is. That's just a nice little knowing reference and a great way to end the decade. And you wonder, again, what when they come to do the next series in 10 years' time, what the you know, how they'll cover all of that. I mean, obviously it will form, there's enough in COVID to form a whole Reeling in the Years episode just about the months probably of April, May and March, April and May of 2020, you know, when we got it put into that first lockdown and all that. So it'll be interesting to see how that's all covered. But we'll have to wait a bit of time for that, Kieran.
Yeah, we will. We'll have to wait about another 10 years or so. So look, before we leave it there, I guess we'll finish how we always finish. So we'll go around and discuss if we were to bring three people from any three people from tonight's episode to a dinner party, who would they be and why? So give us your final three.
Okay, so the first person I'm going to bring is Gabe Byrne. I'm sure I brought Gabe Byrne before. I'm positive, but we both probably have numerous times because, as we said during the episode, he's been a feature of Reeling in the Years the whole way through. So it's a little bit of a throwback, a little bit of nostalgia. I think it's fitting that he passed away this year, right at the end of the current run of Reeling in the Years, because he's been with us since day one. We've seen the early days of the Late Late. There's a clip in the 63 episode or the 64 episode where there's actually a critic, a TV critic, who says he's asked at an awards show, what would you get rid of? And he said, I'd get rid of the Late Late Show a year into its run. So that just shows you know, that there was opposition to him. He rode through it, as I said. He brought a lot of things to the Irish public they hadn't encountered before. He's a constant part of people's lives in Ireland and a national treasure. So Gabe Byrne, bring Gabe Byrne for old time's sake. The second person I'll bring, it's kind of sad because there's another person who died in this episode, but Lyra McKee. She's become a symbol, you know, of defiance. She was a woman doing her job, reporting on this riot. As you said, we don't know whether she was deliberately targeted or not. We still don't know, but there's a suspicion that she was, or that certainly the press were, and that she was the person who got the bullet, unfortunately. But yeah, look, a symbol of the issues that still persist in Northern Ireland. And again, you know, to kind of bring it back to our whole run, like we've seen all that. We've seen the troubles explode in the 1969 episode. We still saw the build up in the late 60s episodes. We saw it explode in 69. We saw the initial reactions in 70, 71. We saw the IRA campaign of bombing through the 70s and the 80s, and the bombs from the Unionist side as well. We saw the peace process in the 90s, the Good Friday Agreement in 98, and we've seen then the various events, you know, both good and bad, you know, the likes of the power sharing between Big E and a Martin McGuinness, you know, for example, you know, a really great thing to see. We saw them shaking hands, we saw them working together. We've seen various times Storm was suspended, we've seen raids on Sinn Féin offices, we've seen spies executed, and we've
Yeah.
seen, you know, that troubles still persist. And Lara McKee is kind of a good symbol of that in this episode. So I'll bring Lara McKee. And the third person I'm going to bring is Greta Thunberg. We just had a conversation about climate change, and she became the face of it from very humble beginnings, really, in terms of just organizing a local school strike in Sweden. You know, just goes to show what people can do when they put their mind to something. She has, you know, led this, and she's re it's really great to have a face of the next generation. You know, she was a very young girl when this started. She still is, obviously, it's only a couple of years ago. But, you know, she is the face of the, like, she is leading that generation of people who are saying, you, as older people, and we're talking about people, our parents, grandpa, you talk about elderly relatives, you are ruining our future here. You know, you are going to make this planet, making this planet a much more hostile place to live for us physically, and you're not doing anything about it. And, you know,
Yeah.
they're not going to stand for it. So I think she's pretty inspirational, and I'd have Greta Thunberg. So Gabe Byrne, Lyra McKee, and Greta Thunberg for my last dinner party.
What a final farewell that would be. So my first would, yes, obviously be Gabe Byrne as well, my former Facebook friend, and just one of my all-time favorite journalists of all time and broadcasters. You know, particularly when we saw his actual human side in the Mike Murphy show. Have you ever
Oh,
heard
yeah,
the
of course, yeah.
have you ever heard the expression "fuck off"? I would then bring Dermot Kennedy because he's I just think he's a fantastic singer. And my final one would be the Donnellys because hey, I'm charity. Maybe they can donate me a few quid. So that is going to do it, folks. That's a wrap, not just on today's episode, but on the entire series. I'll come back to you in a moment. So I mean, what I want to do first of all is I just want to first of all just say a little bit about this whole adventure, what it's been, and just sort of relay a few stats. So if you'll bear with me. So first of all, it's been an absolute pleasure for those of you listening to have you invite us into your homes and listen to us essentially ramble on and you know, listen to what we've had to say about the greatness that was reeling in the years for the last. You know, the last year and a half, essentially, what started as a small project back in February of 2021 has sort of expanded into just something that I've become consumed with, and it's become a passion project. And I've enjoyed hearing feedback, particularly on Twitter, of course, when when they announced that they were going to renew Reeling in the Years for another series. We were over the moon because it meant technically RTE had renewed us for another series, which was great because it would have been over a lot longer. And it's been an absolute pleasure. We've made some fantastic friends, I guess, on this show. We've talked to some fantastic people, and I just want to roughly name off sort of. I might miss one or two, but I have a list here in front of me. So I just want to say a special and a huge thanks to Alex J. Byrne, Sean Murphy, Paul Walsh, Steve Stubbs, Amy Jackman, Sean Marshall, Roger O'Sullivan, Andy O'Regan, James Moran, James, yeah, James Moran, Ronan Carey, John O'Keefe, Keigo, great guest, Keigo, John O'Keefe, Jack McKenna, Ciarán McMahon, Jess Collins, Brian McCormack, Saoirse Smith, Aidan O'Sullivan, Saoirse Smith, Sean Pellington, what a fantastic guest Sean
Sean was
was.
great.
Blaine Hosey, and then Sinead Walsh. We also had Alex Jabarn and Amy Jackman back on again as well. So it has been just an absolute experience in terms of stats. So I just want to let everybody else listening out there know sort of, you know, how much you've contributed, particularly to my life and our lives. So you have listened a total of 2,100 times. So that's how many total plays the entire show has gotten. Our most popular episode was, of course, our first one, which I posted about on Reddit ages ago and, you know, got a lot of interest. Our vast majority of our audience, 67%, of course, is Ireland, 15% United States, which I was very surprised at. I thought we'd be bigger in the UK, but UK is 10%, Germany 2%. The following countries are more or less than 1%: Spain, Australia, Switzerland, Canada, Netherlands, Netherlands, Denmark, France, China, Italy, Luxembourg, Greece, New Zealand, Romania, Turkey, Hong Kong, Austria, South Korea, the UAE, Puerto Rico, Guernsey, India, Finland, Portugal, Indonesia, and Croatia. The vast majority of you have listened in on Spotify, with 39% of our audience coming from there. And 64% of our audience is in the 28 to 34 demographic, with a 64% female, 35% female, and 1% non-specified or non-binary. Look, I don't really have, I'm not, you know, believe it or not, I'm the host of a podcast. I've done stand-up comedy, former radio DJ, and I talk to people for a living. I'm not great with words. But look, I suppose I just want to leave it by saying to everybody listening out there, a huge thank you so much for all of your contributions, all of your listens, your downloads, your interactions, absolutely everything. And of course, a huge thank you to all the guests that I've listed off there. But more importantly, on a personal note, a huge thank you to Simon, who has been just one hell of a co-host, one hell of a an information bank in terms of obscure knowledge, finance, rugby, all of the areas where I lack, he sort of fills me in on, and has certainly been the absolute other half of this show. Couldn't do it without you. And I think coming away from this, somebody that I consider a good mate. So look, with all being said to Simon, to our guests, and most importantly to our listeners as well, thank you so much for being with us since last February, and watch this space, because I'm sure we'll have more to come. So I'll leave it over to you.
Yeah, thanks, Kieran. Look, you've summed it up very well. It's been a great ride, I suppose, for me. I answered a call that you put out back in early 2021 when we were deep in lockdown, because I've always had a love of Reeling in the Ears since I first saw it, probably when it first came out when I was a kid, and it's always been something I've watched and looked forward to it being on TV. I've always tried to have it recorded and have a bank of them. My best mate Chappie, when I lived with him and I moved out home first, we lived together and we played rugby together, and he would laugh at my pre-match routine, which was to watch like 3 or 4 episodes of Reeling in the Ears in the morning, just to kind of clear the head and watch it. It's my bubblegum TV in a way, you know. It's my passion and something that I'm very interested in. So when you put the call out there to looking for someone to come on and do a podcast about Reeling in the Ears, it immediately piqued my interest, and I'm very glad that I responded to your call and that we spoke and obviously got on pretty quickly. I think we both realized we would get on pretty well, and we'd be able to co-host pretty efficiently, and it's been an absolute blast. But listen, I think the biggest thank you needs to go to you. It was your idea, your genius that came up with this great idea, and you've really driven it. Obviously, done the editing and the recording, which I had to remind you about tonight, but that first time for everything, you know, and you've really driven it, booking the guests and all that kind of thing. So like this genuinely, like obviously this wouldn't have happened without you. And it's been a great part. It's been a great part of my life. Like it's been a year and a half. That's not we're getting older, but that's still a large chunk, you know, and it's been a blast and something I really look forward to. Like I've always looked forward to recording. There's never been a day where I've been like, oh, I have to record tonight. You know, we've always been flexible with it, and it's been great. So listen, from the bottom of my heart, thank you. Absolutely. Despite not having met, which we will address shortly in person, you know, it was the lockdown. You don't meet people during lockdown. You know, you had to do everything over a computer, but we'll obviously remedy that. But I consider you a good pal and certainly someone we'll obviously, hopefully we'll keep going in some form, or we'll have some other audio spectacular for people's ears at some point, whether it's Reeling in the Ears related or not. But it's definitely been an absolute blast. So thank you.
I appreciate all of that. Now, look, before we sign off, if you want to pester us on Twitter about what it is that we're going to be doing next, you can follow us at RIYE Podcast. Look, there's not really much more we could say, to be honest. I think everything that has been said. We will certainly be back at some stage with another audio experience for your listening pleasure. So for the final time, I'm going to sign off. So a big thank you to everybody out there for listening. And as always, for joining me this evening and for the last year and a half, a big thank you to Mr. Simon Chadwick.
Thank you very much, Kieran. A pleasure as always. And I hope we educated people on a bit of Irish history, which I think is the the takeaway from this whole experience.
Absolutely. And if at any stage you're sitting a state exam and you go, I know this answer, I heard that on Reeling in Your Ears, and you get it wrong, please don't sue. I have no money.
We are broke.
We are flat broke. RT, you're not returning our emails anytime soon. But in the meantime, between now and then and forevermore, as always, keep on reeling.
Are you reeling in?